We continue this month with sermons based on movies, and having done Les Mis last week, this week we turn to an animated film from last year by Disney Pixar called Brave. You'll see that little phrase on the cover of your bulletin, finding meaning everywhere. I'm a firm believer that in all of life, in every aspect, we can find things that help us come to know ourselves, come to know the world, and come to know God in a deeper way. And so that's why it's fun to go ahead and find these films and watch them. And always the commitment, if you haven't seen the movie, you'll still get the sermon, I promise. So, once in the Highlands of Scotland, a young red-headed princess learned more than she thought possible about herself, about relationships, and about being brave. In the Disney Pixar film Brave, young Merida is anything but your ordinary princess. She needs no prince. In fact, she is defying her parents and tradition specifically to avoid having one pushed on her. She would much rather ride her horse with the wind blowing through her unkempt hair and shoot her bow and arrow with a mastery that is unparalleled. She'd rather climb rocks and play in waterfalls in ways that only the bravest of kings ever had. At no time in the entire movie does she want or require rescuing. Now, that's not to say she doesn't get into a wee bit of trouble now and then, but she wanted to handle it on her own. Her mother, in stark contrast, is a traditional queen with traditional values and traditional perspectives. She spends her days teaching and training and trying to form Merida into a proper princess. It feels as if every other sentence out of her mouth to Merida includes the phrase, "Merida, a princess doesn't ... insert whatever Merida is currently doing at the moment. The queen knows that the people of their land need strong leadership that cannot come from a king alone. Really, she knows that it's the queen that makes things happen, and she does. And she wants her daughter to carry on that tradition. Merida and her mother are at odds with one another, both desperate for the other to listen to them, and neither one of them doing any listening of their own. As is often the case with parents and teenage children, there is great stress in the relationship. But it is not often the case with many parents. Being that it is a time of mystery and magic, young Merida finds her way to a witch's cottage and asks this witch to cast a spell that will change her mother. Aren't you glad your kids can't do that? And as oft to happen in a good fairy tale, the spell that is cast is not what it originally seems to be, and all sorts of new problems are created that must be solved. Once the magic gets involved, everything changes for Merida and her mother, and they must journey together to correct a very hairy and unbearable situation. For those of you that haven't seen the movie, her mom gets turned into a bear. Okay. See, not everyone had to endure the bad joke, but those of you that knew, okay. So, as I said, very hairy, unbearable situation. Okay. Now, lo and behold, as Disney would have it, in solving the new problem, they finally are able to listen to and learn from each other, which also fixes the old problem. Now, one of the most powerful moments in the movie occurs early on when Princess Merida and her mother are both angrily yelling at one another over issues of tradition and the rules and the roles they should play. Merida grabs a sword and slashes through this giant hand-woven tapestry that depicts their family. Her mother's been weaving this for years. Merida's sword, in no unintentional symbolism, slashes right through the middle of the family, separating her from her mother in this tapestry. As the movie progresses, the spell is cast and the situations become difficult, and the old witch offers a small piece of advice. "Mend the bond torn by pride," she says. It takes a couple scenes, but over time the characters realize the deeper meaning, and Merida and her mother work to repair the tapestry. But this advice from the mysterious and quirky wood-carving witch extends beyond the film. In fact, it invites all of us to consider relationships in our lives that have experienced stress and strain and separation. Today, I ask you to consider, what are the relationships in your life that need to be mended? Because brokenness and distance and disagreement, I want to remind you, are completely normal parts of healthy relationships. It happens. Now, there are other conversations to be had that can address unhealthy relationships. If you find yourself in one of those, please know there are different conversations to have. You let me know and we will have them. But as we think about the stress and strain, the brokenness within healthy relationships, how do we go about mending them? Now, before we head to one of our scriptural books of wisdom, I want to address the meaningful wisdom from the movie. Mend the bond torn by pride. This is a good place for us to start. Because whether it's not listening to others, or believing that we're right and they're wrong, and we will wait till they realize it, or refusing to be the first one to apologize, because why should we? Or diminishing other people's feelings and points of view because they're not our own, or not recognizing the fact that perhaps we need to change a little bit too. Pride often leads to some very deep tears in the fabric of relationships. Our scriptures are full of invitations to be humble. All throughout the Old and the New Testament, we hear invitations to be humble. It names and addresses the problems of pride, or at least taking pride in oneself versus taking pride in all that God does and is. So this is a starting point for us in this conversation. Recognizing the ways that pride creates distance by putting all of our energy into ourselves. So we're invited in the beginning of this process to recognize our own humanness, to acknowledge our own imperfection, to name our own need for grace. Because addressing that pride is the first step in mending any broken relationship. I think it's worth having in our minds what we're hoping to accomplish. Right? So we can try to diminish that pride, but what's our goal? Where do we want to be? What does a connected, mended tapestry of life look like for each and every one of us? For that wisdom, I turn to the book of Sirach. Now, this is a book of the Bible many of you may not recognize the name of. It's in a part of the Bible you may not know because it's in something we call the Apocrypha. It's like a collection of books that are almost like an appendix to the scriptures that were added in a later round. Oh, hey, I know we already put this stuff together, but we found these new ones, and the politics have changed. Can we include this now? Sirach originally was excluded quite a bit because it has such a focus on the feminine imagery of God and the feminine role of wisdom in our lives. And it took a while for people to catch on to that. We're still working on it. But this book of Sirach, very similar to the book of Proverbs, in that it contains wisdom in small little snippets that you could easily just write on a piece of paper and fold inside a cookie. Hear the wisdom that is shared in the 25th chapter of Sirach. My whole being takes pleasure in three things, and these three things are beautiful to the Lord and to all people. Harmony among brothers and sisters, friendship among neighbors, and partners who adapt to each other. It's beautiful. This is our invitation to right relationship. Harmony among brothers and sisters, friendship among neighbors, and partners who adapt to each other. It also serves as a good suggestion of where we might begin in righting relationships in life. Consider harmony among brothers and sisters. Now, I do want to remind you that the understandings of family, when our scriptures were written, we're much broader than today's understandings of family. The term brother and sister applied in a much wider context. So only children, you are not exempt from this piece of wisdom. You know, this idea of family and brothers and sisters was a lot easier for me to understand growing up in Nashville, Tennessee, where people called each other things like Brother Fred and Sister Debbie at church. Because we were all brothers and sisters. I like this invitation to understand all of us as brothers and sisters together in Christian family. And then the metaphor of harmony is applied. And I love this metaphor, not only because I love music, because it is so beautiful in all it can mean. When we're invited to harmony, we are invited to think about working together to create something that's more than one of us can do alone. Harmony is about multiple notes working together. It's not about every note being the same. That's not harmony. That's just a louder melody. You know, that's sort of true about healthy relationships as well. It's about finding the right space between the notes that allows them to work together, so that there's space for change, so that something more is added in. And if there's one message that I had drilled into my head over and over and over by choir directors and orchestra conductors and voice teachers growing up, it is this: to harmonize, you must listen as much as you sing. To harmonize, you must listen as much as you play. Harmony is not about solo artists. You want to see a harmony train wreck? I invite you to take three of our current pop stars, put them in a room together, and ask them to sing a song in harmony. Each one will try to pick their own key, set the melody, and assumes everyone else will follow their lead. I tell you, I have more choir directors say that shows like American Idol have ruined choral singing because everybody wants to be a star on their own, versus times when people gathered together, often in places like this, and would sing in beautiful harmony because they were listening to what was going on around them. This is an invitation to relationship in the same way. In mending our relationships, we must listen so that we can find the right space that allows for both of us to share in ways that connect and build from one another. We're also invited in our wisdom today to find friendship among neighbors. I like that phrase, friendship among neighbors. In fact, that's one of the reasons I so desperately wanted to be in Highlands. I wanted neighbors, real ones. You know, ones that knew my name, that would wave hello, that were actually around. I met more people in my first month here than I did in 4 years living in the suburbs. I know more people who walk by and wave, who offer to help with things, who check in on us, because we're neighbors. Now notice the wisdom author here doesn't say we have to be best friends with every person that lives around us. But it does invite us into relationship. You see, this encouragement doesn't necessarily fix a one-on-one broken relationship, the idea of friendship among neighbors. This is actually stepping back to look at a bigger picture. Because when we look at the bigger picture of societal relationship, there is so much stress within society right now, relationally. Between people of different ideologies, between people of differing classes and socioeconomic stresses, between people who live in different places or believe different things, much of the brokenness in our larger communities, in our states and in our nation, could be mended by people getting to know those around them. Even the ones who think, look, act, speak, or live differently. Knowing one another, building relationship, even starting with a simple, casual friendship, changes us and changes the way our world works, because suddenly we're more invested. Now, our wisdom author also invites us to learn how to adapt. Now, I'll tell you, the original language includes a husband and wife who adapt to one another. But I would like to think that the phrase partners who adapt to one another encompasses something just as important, if not more important in its broadness. Now, when Megan and I were preparing for our wedding, the minister who married us did a little bit of premarital counseling with us over lunch one day. In one of our conversations, he offered to us what he felt was the only thing he'd come to know about marriage successfully. He said, when they get married, men think their wives will never change, but they do. And women think their husbands will change the way they want them to, but they don't. Now, pardon the heteronormative phrasing of this advice, but I think it applies far beyond its specific wording to all kinds of relationships. Because in so many relationships of every kind and nature, this is a very true idea. Thinking that others will either not change at all or will change the way we want them to never leads to anything good. Because if that's what we're expecting, we will not be ready for what truly is to come. All of us are constantly changing. We are, and yet somehow we expect others to be exactly the way we want or exactly the way they were, and they need to... No. You know, there's a great picture on the internet of a bridge that was built, and it's surrounded on all sides by water. Because the planners didn't take into consideration when they built the bridge the width of the river during rainy season. Things change. And if we set things too in stone in our own relationships and don't learn how to adapt, we can be stuck with no way to get across. Things are always changing in us and in others, and this idea of adapting is a constant process. Adapting isn't a one-time change. It's a way of living that says, okay, where are we? What do we need? And where do we go from here? Now, I will readily admit that there are times in relationships that even when we do our humble best, mending may not occur. But let it not be for a lack of trying on our part. We cannot change other people. Just ask Princess Merida. She tried and her mom ended up being a bear. The only thing in our power to change is ourselves, which is a very humbling reality. Think about that. The only thing we can truly change is us and our reaction to what happens in this world. But when we can recognize this, we can mend many bonds that have been torn by pride. And I tell you, the Lord will delight in our relationships with our brothers and sisters, with our neighbors, and with those who call us partners in life, in ministry, and in the world. Amen.